right, then what do you want to know?
Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
What is on second?
You don't want who on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base!
Oh, listen to this.
Sure. The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield!
That, of course, is Abbott and Costello, one of the most legendary comedy teams of all time. Chris Costello is the daughter of Lou Costello, and a book that she's written, Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child, has now been turned into an e-book. Chris, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm doing really good. It was kind of fun to hear some of the new stuff because I used to live in Chicago.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Schiller Park.
Schiller Park. We were just talking about Abbott and Costello yesterday that, you know, we did a promo saying that we were going to be talking to you. And it seems like young or old, everybody knows that bit. And it's still hilariously funny every time you hear it. It doesn't grow old.
No, it doesn't. And I always say, you know, long after we're gone, that routine is going to keep them going. I think it just, you know, I did an interview not too long ago, and I was saying that, you know, you don't even have to be an Abbott and Costello fan to really appreciate it, because if you're a sports fan, you know, baseball fan, you're going to really embrace it. But it certainly is the signature skit. I mean, I've talked to young kids, you know, teenage kids, who say their parents, you know, introduce them to it, and it's one of their favorite routines. So I think it transcends all ages.
Aren't they in the Baseball Hall of Fame for that? They're in Cooperstown for that, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not actually inducted.
Oh, they're not?
That's a misconception, though.
Oh.
What it was is that they donated the gold record of who's on first to the Baseball Hall of Fame back in 1957. And it hangs there in perpetuity. You know, we have a lot of people on our Facebook that are making the treks up there to see it. And they also show who's on first in one of the areas of the museum.
Oh, okay. All right. So, Chris, clear this up for us, because as anyone is a fan of your dad's work and his partner Bud Abbott's work has heard over the years, it was a strenuous relationship, wasn't it? It was something of a love-hate relationship.
No, you know, I always say the press has such a capability, excuse me, for kind of taking something that is very innocent, you know, and blowing it way out of proportion. So people think of Abbott and Costello, great comedy team. Oh, my God, they must have hated each other, right? And I say, you know, these two guys were together for 25 years. Bud Abbott said they saw more of each other than their own wives.
Yeah.
What relationship is not going to have an occasional argument or disagreement? I mean, if they had survived 25 years without having an argument, I'd kind of be scratching my head. Of course they did. They had their arguments, they had their disagreements, but as fast as they occurred, they also ended. They were like siblings, seriously.
And siblings fight all the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but people think because they had an argument, they couldn't like each other, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. Both men were fiercely, and I mean fiercely protective of the other. So even in the midst of an argument, if somebody said anything derogatory about my dad or to Bud or about Bud, both guys, you know, really went to the defense of the other. So they were like siblings. The families are still very close to this day. So I always like to say, hey, look, what relationship, what marriage, what friendship, what business relationship is not going to have a disagreement? You know, and so I always kind of laugh it off. But I think to a lot of the fans, they need to have that reassurance. Well, they did like each other. Well, of course they did. They wouldn't have lasted 25 years.
Yeah, true.
Transcending everything from burlesque to radio to film to TV if they didn't like each other. But Dad and Bud were two different personalities off camera. Dad was very gregarious. Bud was a little bit more to himself. You know, he, just a very quiet spoken man. He wasn't his character that you see him as. You know, he a very gentle soul, very, very gentle spirit. You know, so I just say you have these different personalities in the mix as well. But as far as liking each other, they loved each other. They couldn't have been closer than if they were related by blood.
Oh, good.
And let's go back to their beginnings. Is it true they met while your father was hitchhiking?
No. My father first tried to do a stint in Hollywood back in the mid-20s. He wanted to be an actor. Charlie Chaplin was his idol. But he looked at Chaplin more as an actor than as a comic. So he came out to Hollywood, and he was trying to make a break into films. He worked on a construction crew at MGM, tried stunt work, which is kind of funny in itself, because they put him on a horse, and he had never seen a horse because he was from Paterson, New Jersey.
No, just a horse head in your bed, maybe, but not, you know.
Really. He said, you know, that he slept in a lot of parked cars, eating a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. He did a couple of extra bits, Laurel and Hardy's film, Battle of the Century. He's sitting ringside. And also did Trail of 98, which was a silent film epic. And just don't even blink. You know, he comes through the saloon doors and that's it. But it was an actress, Dolores Costello, that suggested he go back to New York, perfect his craft, let Hollywood ask for him. And that's what he did. But he got as far as St. Joe, Missouri, and ran out of money. And he noticed that across the street from this coffee shop he was in, they were advertising for a Dutch comic. So he went over there. And he said, I'll do everything except I won't wear a putty nose. I won't talk in a Dutch accent. I'll do everything else. And so he was there for about a year. And then he got enough money together and he got himself back to New York. And then he started in burlesque as a dancing juvenile.
A dancing juvenile.
I like the name.
That's a great band name.
Somebody that's a great
name.
Basically, the dancing juvenile was the warm-up act for the Top Banana.
Yeah.
And so he got the crowd going. And he was there in burlesque, you know, doing that for a while. And then he teamed up with a straight man. And his name escapes me right now. At any rate, they were performing on the circuit. And the dad straight man got sick one night. And Bud happened to be on the same bill, knew all the routines because he was a veteran in burlesque longer than Dad. And he offered to fill in, and history was made.
We're talking with Chris Costello. Chris, of course, the daughter of the legendary Lou Costello. Her book, Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child, is now an e-book that's on Crossroads Press. Chris, you mentioned that your dad did some work with Laurel and Hardy, which is interesting because sometimes, I know you're already aware of this, your dad's work and Bud Abbott's work was compared to Laurel and Hardy's. Was he comfortable with that comparison?
No, there was no comparison. I always say, you know, this is apples and oranges. Yeah, how do you compare any of the great iconic teams? You can't.
Right.
You know, everyone had a different style. They appealed to a different type of an audience. I always say if you look back into the history of comedy teams starting off in World War I, it was Wheeler and Woolsey that really lifted the morale of the American public. And then you get into the Depression years and you've got Laurel and Hardy, you've got W.C. Fields, that were sort of lifting the morale. Then World War II, Abbott and Costello, you know, comes in. But, you know, I always say that to compare all these teams to each other, you can't.
Sure.
And I always say, look, you don't have to like every team, you know. I mean, it's what somebody gravitates towards, the type of comedy. But you can appreciate what they gave, you know, to the world and certainly the American public.
No question. Yep. All right, Chris, hold that thought. We got to take a quick break. Chris Costello is here, the daughter of Lou Costello of Abbott and Costello fame. Her book is called Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Our guest is Chris Costello. Chris is the daughter of Lou Costello of Abbott and Costello fame. She has a book, Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child. You can get it in regular book form or now on e-books, wherever books are sold. Chris, I got to pay a compliment to your dad. He made a movie, of course, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And a couple of years ago, I was having a conversation. We in Chicago have a horror movie host here named Svengoolie. And I said to Svengoolie,
you know
Svengoolie.
Well,
I was hoping.
Schiller Park.
Yeah, so you know Svengoolie.
I love Rich.
Rich Coase.
Yeah.
So I said to him, one of my favorite horror movies, this will sound crazy, but I love Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And he nodded and he said, that's a great horror movie. And we agreed it's because we already knew Bud and Lou, and we didn't want to see Frankenstein or Dracula or the Wolfman do harm to people that we knew and loved.
That is so funny. And would you believe that is the one film my dad hated?
Really? Why?
Well, he felt that Universal had lost complete trust in Abbott and Costello carrying the film. And so therefore they were going to overload this film with all these monsters. And so Dad was really not too happy about it. And I think he went up to the big guys up in the tower at Universal and threw the script on the desk and said, my 3-year-old kid could write a better, story than this. But I think if he were to come back and see what a cult film this film has turned out to be, and how the film actually has generated another legion of fans for him and Bud, they would be astounded, absolutely astounded. But, that was not his favorite.
Now, did your father and Bud Abbott get enough money that they deserved? I know things are different now, and I feel like maybe they didn't get the funds they should have.
Well, I think during that era, it was pretty good money. You know, of course, today it's a whole other story, as you're saying. I mean, actors are getting, huge amounts of money for their films and points and this and that. What Dad and Bud did do is they entered into what was called the 11-picture deal with Universal, that they would receive profit participation off of 11 of their pictures. The only one that was never included was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But I think for their era, they made very good money. I think towards the 50s, when they were getting older, energy was not as high. I think the scripts were failing as far as content. And I think some writers were on board that really didn't have the feel for Abbott and Costello as some of the earlier writers on their films. It was tapering off. But again, it was a different era, different era. But for their time period, I think they did very well. And, stars back then, they didn't get profit participation. Dad and Bud, and through their manager, Eddie Sherman, negotiated this, with Universal. So, I think they did very, very good.
Well, that's good to know.
That is good to know. Chris, one of the most difficult episodes in your dad's life was the loss of your brother, just a baby, not even 1 year old, drowning in the family pool. An awful, awful story. This changed him a bit, right? I would imagine it would have to change him a bit.
I think it would change anybody to lose a child. No parent should ever, ever have to outlive their child. And I think because of the tragic incident of Lou Jr. Butch, passing away just 3 days shy of his first birthday, it was also my dad's first day back on his radio show after being laid up with rheumatic fever for a year. And so, he had all this time with Lou. And whereas with my two older sisters, he was still working burlesque, so he missed some of those cherished, moments, the first step, the crawling, whatnot. But he had asked my mother to keep the baby up that night to see if he would be able to recognize his voice on the radio.
Yeah.
When Lou Jr. passed away, of course, every major star in Hollywood was calling in saying they would take over for him on the show that night. And he said, no, he said, I'm going back. And everybody kind of just looked at him and go, how? And he said, because I asked Dan to keep the baby up tonight to see if he could recognize my voice. And wherever God has taken my son, I want him to know he can still hear me.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But he turned something very negative into a very positive healing process, because in 1947, and this is still going today in East Los Angeles, he opened up the Lou Costello Jr. Youth Foundation for the underprivileged kids of East L.A., a place to get them off the streets into a supervised area. He built an Olympic-sized swimming pool so that every child would learn how to swim. No one was turned away. There was no payment for it. Everything was free. And this was his way to heal, and it was giving back. And that's what I think when people say, how do you want your father remembered? Oh, of course, Who's on First and all these great films he did. But for me, and I think a lot of the family, it's remembering the humanitarian side of him. There's an old expression that someone who likes to keep giving, you know, to others, has, what is it, long arms, short pockets. And that's what he was all about. He was out there to help people. He wanted people to have a better life. If there was a child in need, don't even ask twice. You know, he was right there. And that's sort of how I really would love people to remember him by, because he really was a humanitarian.
Oh, yeah.
We have a caller who wants to say something to you, Chris. Chris Costello on the line with us. Harold, you had a comment for Chris?
Yeah, hello, guys, and a pleasure to speak with you. My mom got me into Abbott Costello when I was young. She, you know, there were certain things that she loved, and she was crazy about any Abbott Costello movie. But Paul Harvey used to do little segments on the radio, and he talked about, Lou Costello played a boxer a few times in some of his movies, and it was always, you know, hilarious and everything. But he actually was a very good boxer, from what I understand, as an amateur boxer.
Is that true, Chris?
He wasn't that good. He became a Lou King. Before he went to Hollywood the first time, and he was living at home, and he was always appearing at the breakfast table with these shiners, and he kept saying to his mom, you know, you really got to lower these doorknobs or raise them or whatever. And so they did not know what he was doing, but it was his uncle who said to my dad's father, my grandfather, he said, I hear there's a new kid that is going to be fighting this weekend. Do you want to go with me? He said, sure, let's go. They sat ringside, and all of a sudden, my dad comes into the ring as Liu Kang, and my grandfather almost passed out, and the next morning, Dad came to the breakfast table with another shiner, and my grandfather was reading the newspaper, and he just kind of lowered the paper, looked at him over his glasses, and said, how you doing this morning, Liu Kang? And that ended the boxing career.
Sure.
So, you know, he was not really a great boxer. But he, you know, all the footwork and stuff, you know, I mean, a lot of the footwork you see in films is his training ground from training as a boxer. Also, he was a great basketball player in the South, shooting champion, of 1924-25, in New Jersey.
Wow.
So, you know, he loved sports. He was very agile, very, very, very agile. He knew how to move, use his body. And he carried that over into burlesque.
There you go, Harold.
Pratfall.
Okay, great.
You know,
thank you for calling,
Chris. To be honest with you, I'm glad he wasn't a great boxer, because he turned out finding the exact right vocation. What a hysterical man your father was. Chris Costello's book, again, is called Lose On First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child. You can get it on book. You can get it on ebook. Go to crossroadspress.com. They've got the information. It's on Amazon. It's on eBay. It's everywhere. Great to meet you, Chris. Thanks so much for spending time with us.
Wonderful talking with both of you. And say hello to Chicago for me. I miss that city.
Done deal.
When you come back to visit, come in and see us. We'll go to Schiller Park for lunch.
Oh, I love it.
All right. You got a date.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks so much. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we've got some news for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.